Like to welcome everyone back to Breaking It Down. Frank McKay here. Much more importantly, our continuing series with Clayton Rippey, world-renowned artist, world traveler, now 95 years young, and he's seen a lot for a young guy. He's been around a long time for a guy his age. Just tremendous amount of work. Prolific artist, over 9,000 pieces between sketches and sculptures, and you know, mostly oil on canvas and paintings is his specialty. But Clayton Rippey is our very special guest. Clayton, welcome back.
Thank you.
In the last show, the last time we spoke, we touched on why an artist or how an artist could take off, and a lot of it comes down to public relations. A lot of it comes down to someone prominent, let's say, buying a piece of artwork and then continues on from there and gets a little bit of publicity or gets a little bit of ink somewhere. And it carries on. I recently had Sally Kirkland. I don't know if you know the actress Sally Kirkland. She was Robert De Niro's, you know, one of his early first loves, and she kind of brought him into the acting world. And she had called me, you know, kind of out of the blue, and we did an interview. And one of the things she talked about was credits. You know, when you get attached, or when a artist, in this case an actor, gets attached to a piece, the other directors want to work with them. And when Robert De Niro became a star, people who worked with him were more apt to get picked up because they had that credit of working with De Niro. Or Brian De Palma was somebody that he kind of grew up with in the business, and De Palma became a big deal because De Niro became a big deal, and vice versa. What came first, the chicken or the egg? And this all spills down, and then the Sally Kirklands and other folks like that get Bruno Kirby's. They get picked up because they've worked with somebody like De Niro. And again, I think, you know, we've already established the fact that it works that way in art also. And if artists out there are just going, you know, completely under the radar screen, so much comes down to good fortune or good planning. So if there's somebody who just, you know, is an absolute brilliant artist over the years, and it could be somebody who has great pieces 200 years ago, and you see them and you just see these beautiful pieces, but they're not selling for anything, or they just didn't get a lot of attention. Is there still a chance after 100 years or 200 years that somebody gets picked up upon and then it just explodes from there? Or does it usually happen soon after their life has ended?
Well, I don't know when it happens. It just happens. But I think the possibility of someone finding a piece of art is quite great, because a lot of artists die, and then their family inherits the painting, and then maybe they give it to somebody else, or they sell it, and quite often it ends up in an auction somewhere. And if people see it and they really like it, somebody will pay the opening bid price, or maybe even bid it up against several other people. So if that happens, it doesn't matter where the artist is, whether he's alive or gone, and so the painting starts assuming a value of its own, and if there's more paintings to be found, they go up every time they sell something, and the price goes up, then the price of all of the paintings becomes greater. And this happens. I think that the Antique Roadshow is probably one of the most famous everyday kind of auctions that go on, and they continually broadcast that on television whenever they have a meeting. And so the things that people find in that show, a lot of them get sold. They're asking the value of these things, and they get a valuation on national television. And so then when they advertise it for sale, somebody's going to be watching and they'll buy it. So and then there's lots of small auctions going on all the way across the country, any place. The Cowboy Artists, for example, of America, down in and I think it's Oklahoma, where they have their museum, and they have an auction every year, and that has continually become more and more successful every time they do. And I think all of the other auctions that are held independently of the big ones, they quite often are quite successful.
Yeah.
And eventually the artists, the work of the artists may find itself being submitted into an auction house for sale that by a person that the artist never heard of before he died. And they have eventually come across his paintings and they put them up. And I think the more people that go to these auctions, the more valuable the artist is going to become. Well, it's a growing thing.
Yeah. Let me remind folks just tuning in or turning on their radios or their computers, Frank McKay here, much more importantly, Clayton Rippey, part of our continuing series with the artist, Clayton Rippey. And let me ask you this. Have you ever heard of a piece going for high numbers? I mean, $1 million, whatever, or even less than that, where they didn't know who the artist was, and it was just off of the pure beauty of the artwork or the pure uniqueness of the piece. Does it always have to have an artist and a story attached to it in order for it to hit the jackpot, so to speak? Or have you heard of pieces going that are completely unknown?
Well, I think there are some, but it always helps if the publicity is out there and the people know when you say this is by so-and-so, the people know who you're talking about. But I don't know if there are an awful lot of paintings that sell for a big price when nobody knows who they are. Usually the artist during his career, or if he's still alive and he's still working, he gets write-ups in papers and people get to know who he is. And you see him, maybe he's representative in books somewhere, or he's represented on a TV show or whatever. The more people that know who he is, the better off he is in terms of sale of his work.
You know, I'll go back to that conversation I recently had with Sally Kirkland, and the reason I keep going back to it is because she spoke a lot about this, and she spoke about Warhol, and she did a couple of his films early on. But in the beginning, she said he was completely unknown and not taken very seriously. And then just somewhere along the line, he just became it. He got that it factor, or he just became hot all of a sudden. And then it kind of took off from there. And then, you know, I guess, you know, after his passing, it went even further than that. But you witnessed it. I know we spoke about Warhol, you and I did, and, you know, talked about the, you know, the Campbell soup cans, and, you know, a lot of people chuckled about that and thought it was silly, and pop culture was silly and all this. But, I mean, it's anything but silly when you get to the auction house and it's selling for, you know, six digits and seven digits and more. You know, anything that's Andy Warhol is selling for quite a bit of money. And you know, that being said, did you watch that develop? Did you watch Andy Warhol develop as a thing from start to finish, or did you kind of pick up in the middle of it?
Oh, I just sort of followed along and read the newspapers whenever there was a Warhol thing, and it became more and more frequent. But I think sometimes even, there are so many really powerful art dealers in the world, and if you get a painting in an art dealer's shop, and he is more famous than the artists that are there, then the artist's reputation goes up because he's exhibiting in a great place, or if a big museum has a show of art. And I remember way back when I was just a young man, I think it was the actress Lana Turner, was working in an ice cream parlor or someplace, or a hamburger joint. And one of the big producers saw her and liked her looks, and it wasn't very long before she was an international movie star. I mean, they started, I think, probably, maybe it was Clark Gable. And so that's one of those instantaneous things where she was just an ordinary gal mixing preparing milkshakes. The next thing you know, she's a big pinup star.
Yeah, I think the story always is the drugstore, that she was discovered in the drugstore. And at the time, drugstores weren't what we'd see now. It's not CVS or Walgreens or anything along those lines. It was someplace you'd go to get a fountain drink or a soda or a malted or some kind of thing like that. But you're right. And Lana Turner was literally discovered in a drugstore and at the counter of a drugstore, and she became a huge superstar. And again, Clayton Rippey here with me, Frank McKay. And but that happens, and those stories are classic, and those are legendary stories, but they do happen. So seldom do you hear about them. But you must pay attention. I mean, I shouldn't say you must have paid attention, but I would assume that you paid attention to when something like that happens to artists. And I'm always
I don't think it would be as sensational if an artist sold to somebody who is really famous, because there's much more attention paid to stars in Hollywood because of its publicity and public image all over the world. And when they see an ordinary person just working and suddenly becoming a big star overnight, I think the actor Ernest Borgnine, for example, when he per day portrayed his role in From Here to Eternity, I think it was.
Yeah.
He became immediately was a big attraction, and he's been a very, very, very successful actor ever since. And it was that one movie that, when he stood out as such a villainous guy, he was an immediate success. And I don't think I remember when the movie was made. I hadn't heard of him even before that movie came out. But it was such a sensational performance. People saw him, and they collected him.
It's funny you say Ernest Borgnine, because he's somebody who doesn't look like a movie star, and he had a career all into his 90s. He was acting all the way up to his passing, and he got an Academy Award for Marty, and that was a great movie, but it was anything but movie star like, and the whole plot was a very touching plot, about. Like average people, finding happiness with each other and peer pressure in some ways, making fun of him or his girl, calling his girl a dog. But I imagine it happens in all walks of life, including art, where you get an Ernest Borgnine every once in a while who he doesn't look anything like the people that you would think of success. If you said, hey, look, here's Ernest Borgnine. He's going to be a big movie star. Everybody would say, what are you, out of your mind? He's not going to be a big movie star. He's a big, heavy guy and mean-looking guy and, rough on the eyes. He's certainly not going to be a big star. And of course, you'd be wrong. And he had an incredible career, a legendary career. The same can go with artists. And
I think there are thousands of artists out there that are collectible. All over the place, and I think there are thousands of musicians who will never be heard except if somebody walks into the little speakeasy where they're playing this great music, and if they don't get a break somewhere where they can become known and become famous, they'll just continue to play here and there, and that'll be it. But it's sometimes that when they're in a position like that, they never have a real chance to become famous. But you can find them all over. Go to any big city and go to the little piano bars and stuff, and you'll find piano players that are brilliant all over. And you never hear of them unless they get some kind of a break that maybe features them in a movie, or they do a record that some big producer helps them do, and it becomes a big hit. That's it, and it happens, I think, all over.
Yeah,
and not just with painters, but with all kinds of people in the arts. That maybe they're actors in a little community theater, every year, and they and maybe even do it as a hobby, and you know, and they get found eventually. I think Hilary Swank was discovered by I think probably Clint Eastwood who brought her out, and she's become a successful star in quite a number of movies.
Academy Award winner Hilary Swank, great actress too. She's really she's beyond. Just good at this point. And she, I think for Million Dollar Baby, she won Academy Award, and Clint Eastwood directed her and was her co-star in that. You're right. And that really brought her to prominence, but you're right. And it's almost sinful to think that all of these great works of art and, you know, whether they're musical or they're literary, or they're part, you know, they're painted and they're art, what you would call, you know, art created that way. It's sinful that some of these will go and not be discovered. But something was invented or created and promoted a while ago that, you know, that really came to prominence in the 90s that should make it a lot easier. And it's called the internet. And now you don't have to search all the, you know, all the roads. You don't have to go down Route 66 and look in every gallery. You could search online and you could find things. And hopefully the millennials will take that to the next level. And they'll really be, with, you know, using care to make sure that, that the internet increasingly brings out talent, that would never be discovered, and you try to make it easier, and you try to make it, you know, things viral, as they call it. Frank McKay here with Clayton Rippey, just a couple moments left with Clayton Rippey. But your thought on that? I mean, next generation has an opportunity to really do a lot more than certainly your generation and my generation was able to do. I think they've got a responsibility to artists and musicians out there, actors, to figure out a way to promote them.
One of the things that people have to realize is that the higher you get toward the top of anything, the less room there is.
Right.
So there's only a certain amount of room left when you get up to the top of whatever you're going toward, and it's kind of a pyramid shaped thing.
You're not kidding. And you know, but the other thing that goes along with that, there are some people that absolutely just do not work all that hard. I mean, there are people that are talented, and you know, and again, I don't want to out somebody, but I, you know, he came across an artist who was very talented, and just has no notoriety over the years, and that individual artist has 50 pieces that they, I mean, 50 pieces, you know, and I mean, they're not. They're not all what I would call math. I mean, it's subjective, of course, but none of those are what I would call masterpieces beyond masterpieces. But this is an excellent artist. I don't know that you could master a craft and only do 50 pieces. In being prolific, there has to be something said for being prolific, but there also, I think there has to be somewhat of a work ethic involved, or you really don't have any opportunity or any right to complain.
Well, that's true. I think a lot of people think that success comes from luck, but there's anything you want to try to do or be, you have to really work at it. And since I've been involved in both music and art, you have to keep working at everything you do. And when I was a kid, I was practicing about 2 or 3 hours a day in music. But I found out that the same thing is true of art. You have to go after it.
Yeah, and there's no excuse if you love what you're doing and you can and you have the time, and you do it well and you have some appreciation. There's no excuse not to do it constantly. It's, you know, I understand people that are, you know, in early on you were making a living as an educator, so you couldn't donate all of your time or you couldn't dedicate all of your time to painting. But when you got the opportunity, when you got the sabbaticals, you really took advantage of it. And that, something has to be said for that. Again, I'll ask you for a closing thought. I hate to put you on the spot, but we're talking quite a bit about unknown artists and discovering unknown artists. Clayton Rippey here with me, Frank McKay. We've got about a minute left. Your thoughts on this? I mean, anybody who's listening who has an artist that they love and they just they've never been heard of by anybody, or they have a son or a daughter or a father who's an artist. What do you tell them? What's the first thing you tell them to do?
Well, I think the first thing is, are we talking about the artist or the buyer?
I think the artist. What should the artist or the artist's loved ones do?
Well, I think you have to think about your art in terms of everyday thing. You just can't get bored with it. If you get bored with a piece of art and you produce a piece of art while you're bored, then the public is going to be just as bored as you were when they see it. It'll come through to them. So you have to think of your art as something that you cannot wait to get around to do. It's just something you have to look forward to every day and like what you're doing. If you don't do it, then you better go into selling jelly beans or something.
Yeah, yeah, very good. Clayton Rippey, thank you very much for being here. Happy birthday once again. And I want to thank everybody for tuning in. Clayton Rippey here with me, Frank McKay, part of a continuing series. Clayton, thank you very much.
And thank you, Frank. I enjoyed it.
And we want to thank all of you for tuning in. Frank McKay signing off. We'll see all of you next time on Breaking It Down.